You're listening to Distraction Therapy with me, Rob Watson.
Oh,
You're listening to Distraction Therapy with me, Rob Watson. In this part of the programme, we're going to spend a little time with the voices from a Word open mic event recorded at the Attenborough Arts on Thursday the 20th of May. It's not a full recording of the evening, it's a short edited feature intended to give a flavour of the room, the performers and the atmosphere of a night where poetry was not only read, but tried out, shared, tested, sung, laughed through and listened to. What interested me, being in the room with a recorder, was not only the poetry itself, it was the feeling of the evening. A loosely curated event has a particular energy. It's not random, but it's not over-controlled. There is a structure, a stage, a microphone, a running order, and a host keeping things moving. But within that structure, there's also uncertainty. People arrive with folded paper, phones, notebooks, memory, nerves, humour, and something they want to say. That's where open mic events become interesting. They're not just showcases. They are places where a voice becomes public for a few minutes. To set the scene, here's Lydia Towsey, Creative Director of Word, describing the organisation and the particular feeling of this open mic takeover.
Okay, I am Lydia Towsey. I am the Creative Director of Word. And I come from other places too. Word is a poetry organisation delivering one of the longest running poetry and spoken word nights in the UK. We've been going for about 24 years. To say that out the side of my mouth, because nobody really knows for sure, but we know it's at least that. We take place, our core night takes place at Attenborough Arts Centre, generally on the last Thursday of the month, but we can go rogue and switch it up. We kind of have three baskets of areas that we place our work within, or we theme our work around. One is a commitment to poetry, high quality poetry, and advocacy for that and its infrastructure locally, nationally and internationally. And we work with poets from across the world. We've had people like Fred Degar from LA. We've had Kwame Dawes in the past from Jamaica, the director of the Calabash, or originator of the Calabash Festival. Our former patron was the late Jean Vinter-Vries, MVE. So we work internationally in this way, and we have many partners who support that. And then, of course, you know, we try and share, you know, the very best on the national and the local scene. The other area of our work is across community, and we work with community groups. We work with people facing all kinds of challenges across Leicester and Leicestershire. To create parity and to create a space where all voices are included and heard. And then the final area of our work is around professional development, and we in that area focus on mentoring and supporting voices at whatever stage in their career they are at. So quite a lot of stuff, really, off the top of my head.
What did you enjoy about this evening's event?
Oh my gosh, it was so unexpected. It was an open mic takeover, and I don't believe we've ever staged a pure open mic takeover before. Our normal format is we invite a booked act to headline the evening, sometimes two booked acts, but this evening we decided to give the whole stage and space over to local artists and to the open mic. And I mean, what I loved about it was the huge take-up, first of all. We were really taken by surprise by the demand for slots. So we didn't, even the whole evening given over to them, we didn't have enough slots for people. But that's wonderful, because people were still in the room listening to each other, whether or not they were behind the mic. And people were interacting and performing, whether or not they were behind the mic, which was beautiful to see. But there were people dancing, not in the aisles because we don't have one, but dancing around their tables and handbags, clicking their fingers, chanting along, singing, responding. There was even a heckling dog. I mean, it doesn't get more inclusive. It just doesn't. So that was wonderful. And then I would say just the huge range of voices. There were people who focused on faith and their belief systems and were really committed and authentic, you know, to that sort of aspect of their lives. And then there were people talking about trans rights. And then there were people talking about dementia, people talking about Barry Manilow. Barry Manilow and doing a the curtain trick where you hold up a towel or a curtain and then you run behind a door and look like you've gone invisible. And they did it without a door. I mean, it's talent. There was talent this evening. My brain is fizzing with it still, and I'm going to be unpacking it for the rest of this evening.
And where do people find out more information?
We love Instagram, particularly. We love Instagram at the moment. We are at Word Leicester, spelt the street way. And to be clear, because there may be some disagreement about the street way to spell Leicester, that would be the full thing. Word, so WORD, then Leicester, LESTA. Yes, no H or ice in it. So at Word Leicester, we're on Instagram. Please follow us, anyone listening, because we love followers and friends and we'll follow you back. We are also on Facebook. We're Word Poetry, if you search that, or Word, as infeasible as that sounds. If you do search Word with an exclamation mark, all in capitals, we should come up as a group. And we have a website, but it's currently switching over to another website, but there are still some good bits on it where you can learn more about us, like our bio and our background and what we've done in the past. And that is wordpoetry.co.uk. And I've given my proper telephone voice to share that information because it's quite formal. Thank you.
That phrase, open mic takeover, is useful. It suggests a space being handed over, not simply filled in. The evening had a feeling of people stepping forward at different levels of confidence and polish. Some performers were experienced, some were reading for the first time. Some pieces were carefully shaped, some still had energy of something newly written. For distraction therapy, this matters because poetry can alter the quality of attention in a room. It can pull us away from the habit of processing everything as information. It invites a slower and more receptive form of listening. The first voice in this short sequence is Kamisha Hawkins. Her work moves through shame, grief, fear, self-acceptance and repair.
Welcome up onto the stage, Kamisha Hawkins. Come on up, Kamisha.
Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm just going to get straight into it because I'm trying to cram three in as swiftly as possible. The first one is called My Human Condition. I held my shame by the hand. I told her it's time. We're going to walk through outside opinions as if we were walking through Wonderland. I hugged my humiliation to hold her while she was feeling less than accepted. I spoke to myself, blame, with love in my heart. I told her that she was here to highlight all of my dark. I giggled with my guilt at her baggage and how heavy it weighed, while we wondered how we carried it so long. I told her it was all okay. I whispered words of encouragement to all my deepest fears. I let them know they were needed, that fear had led me to this moment right here. Because instead of running away from her, I was finally standing my ground, standing beside her, fixing her crown. Oh, beautiful, lonely grief, you are always so cruel and so kind. So meek with a fiery streak, always there through tears and heartache.
Next piece changes the scale. It moves from inward feeling to the practical imagination of travel Access and Body. Bavin Gohol's piece, Dear Rome, is about wanting to visit a place but having to ask ordinary necessary questions first. Will there be lifts? Will there be toilets? Will the city allow the journey to happen?
So, this is Bavin. I'm just here to hold, for no reason really, hold the paper. Is that what the table's here now? But I can still do it if you like. Yeah, go on.
Bavin!
It's called Dear Rome. Will I ever go? Everyone that I ever spoke to says disabled access is crap. Would my wheelchair headache? Would it be a headache for my wheelchair? Would there be lifts? Would I be able to toilet? Would I be able to have coffee and go to the toilet? I wouldn't know. Well, once you would leave the UK, this will relax, open relax. But Rome is my place I must go. Your Colosseum is my kingdom. I love watching the gladiators. Where will I ever go? The Roman holidays will all be open. The people watching on the Spanish steps, life is very slow. And women all go to the Vatican's and other things. The simple access will have to call it quits. Yeah, let me go. Thank you.
Open mic rooms often have that quality of collage. One voice leaves an image in the air and the next voice changes the light around it. Kat Hurst's piece is especially useful because it reflects directly on poetry itself. It's about returning to poetry after a long absence. It remembers poetry as something that had once felt like a test, something to be analysed, until it stopped breathing. Then, in the poem, poetry comes back differently, less like an examination, more like an open door.
I'm Kat, I'm a white woman in her late 40s, currently retraining as a clinical psychologist at the University of Leicester across the road. This poem was inspired by a lecture exploring poetry and mental health led by Lydia Townsend of Word and Bright Sparks. Alongside performances by Sophie, Emily and Jess from the Showcase Collective. Now, unexpectedly, that lecture led me back to poetry after a 28-year hiatus. I know I don't look that old, but I am. So this is my first attempt at writing poetry since A-level English back in the 90s, when poetry walked back into the room. I hadn't opened poetry since 1998. Classrooms that smelled like dupe and obligation. Words pinned down like specimens, analysed until they stopped breathing. And maybe I followed suit, for a while at least. Back then, poetry wore a suit. For me, it spoke in riddles it didn't want me to solve. It felt like being tested on someone else's feelings. Today, however, poetry walked in barefoot. Mickey Mouse in denim with strong coffee. Lydia. Sophie's voice didn't ask permission, just arrived, like it had every right to take up space in the room. Emily held silence like it was part of the poem, like the gaps were speaking too, and we were finally allowed to listen. Jess, there was something uncontained there, like the words hadn't been tamed yet, like they still remembered where they came from. And Lydia. Not teaching, not leading, not directing, more like opening a door and standing to the side. Come in, they seem to say. Come in and notice what follows you. And I did. We all did. I noticed that part of me, that part that still thinks poetry has rules, that it needs to be clever, neat, or finished. I noticed the familiar discomfort of not knowing what something means. But then there was a moment where something in my mind shifted. Not loudly, not dramatically, just a quiet suggestion. What if I don't have to know? What if it just is?
That line of thought feels close to the centre of distraction therapy. What if we don't have to know exactly what something means before it matters to us? What if a poem, a sound, a voice, or a small live moment can simply be allowed to work on us? That's part of the distraction therapy sensibility. Not distraction as avoidance, but distraction as a change of state. A way of moving out of the narrow, task-focused mind and into something more reflexive, more porous and more imaginative. The next voice is Pearl with a piece called I Am Peace. This is a personal spoken word testimony about belonging, family, womanhood, faith and finding a place to stand. It's intimate material, so it's presented here as one person's creative expression within a live poetry setting.
But my name is Pearl. I am an African woman in her early 30s, and I'm wearing something black with a dash of gold, I think. And I'm wearing red. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. So, I'm used to writing in my journal, but today I've decided to share a piece of myself with you lovely people. It's called I Am Peace. Spoken word. Okay.
Yes, sister.
Well, thank you. I'll look at you for now. This is me and you. Alright. I have come into the world, but who am I? Where do I belong? Culture says I belong in the kitchen, but is that all? It says, no, you make sure all the king's needs are met. Is that all? It says, no, better than air for him. At this point, I realize a very big part of my being is tailored around he. A father, a husband, bearing a son. Single, I am a miss, and he a mister. Married, I become a missus. He remains a mister. If I leave, I revert back to yet another man's name, my father. Where do I belong? Rejected by my father for being a spitting image of the woman he's grown out of love with. How could any man love me if the one whose seed I was formed out of discards me for a new family? Leaving me with his name, that doesn't mean much for me in terms of belonging. Where do I belong? My mom was chosen yet again. Beautiful for her, but where does that leave me? Born an only child, doomed to loneliness my whole life, where do I belong? In a desperate attempt to create my own place of belonging, pregnant one minute, early termination the next. Let's try again, I thought. Pregnant yet again, twins miscarried. Crushed, doomed, where do I belong? Then we hit a big milestone, 30 years of age, unspoken for, without an offspring. There must be something wrong with her, they say. Surely something is wrong with me, I start to believe. The irony is, the male counterpart, 30, unmarried, without an offspring, eligible bachelor, but you, damaged. Society doesn't know what to do with you. Church doesn't know what to do with you. Then it all begins, the dread of waking up, because you feel displaced in society. Where do I belong? Can't sit with the mothers, can't sit with the married, not even a ministry in church. But isn't church supposed to be a home for the lost, the weary, the unbelonging. Where do I belong? Oh, but church begins in the Word. So in pain, tears and shame, hate laden with rejection, I look down for the first time, tears blurring my vision. I open His Word, and in the glorious pages of Isaiah, I hear, I created you, pearl. I formed you, my little girl. Do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you a pearl, and you are mine. And for the first time in my life, as long as I can remember, my heart leaps with joy. I have met my Father, the Father, our Father. Finally, I have a place as the apple of my Father's eye. I said, Daddy, why do you hate women so much? He opened the blueprint of fatherhood himself, and I realized, oh, they've got it all wrong. Oh, I'm glad I waited. I am glad. Yes, I'm delighted. If they keep me in the kitchen, He will come to me. If they keep me out of church, He dwells in me. In my Father's house, there are many mansions, but I want to cling to His bosom. I want to be at His feet, because finally, I am where I belong. His name is Daddy. I am Daddy's girl. Praise.
From this point, the evening moved across different registers. It was not only serious or reflexive, it also contained humour, theatricality, rhythm and play. Jonathan Smith's The Phoenix Rises was a short first-time performance built around mythic images of ash, darkness, struggle and fight. Then, at the other end of the tonal range, there was the comic spoken word and performance Thin Man's Below Decks brought absurdity, online dating, espionage fantasy, theatrical exaggeration and physical comedy into the room.
From ash and amber, he rose again, he wind lay down, his fire of pain. Through his night dark, he veiled, his pride was torn. To woe and undead was he hoped to torn six. A labyrinth was waiting, tense with a silent snake. Coil of the shadow of his brothers who break. Trapped in the pit, and his scale gleamed gold and as a blade in his gasper, and he stood on floor well, cut through the coils, and his brain burned bright, deafening the dark, endless night, through the pits of the skies, and his wings take flight, the phoenix rise, and timeless flight. That's it.
It says, I am the thin man, so that tells you something about my appearance. I'm incredibly handsome with hair the colour of autumn's bounty. At least that's what it says on the back of the packet. And I said to my partner, I said, how would you describe my hair colour? She said, weak old rat in a trap. It's nice, isn't it? So I tell you that because you can see we're not really getting on all that well. We're both looking for love, to be fair. She's doing it a lot more assiduously than me, but this is my attempt to describe in poetic form the way I'm looking for love at the moment, and thanks to Pam for helping me with this. Seriously, she did. But so I've shortened the title to Below Decks. She said, don't do the whole title because you tell everybody everything that's in the poem. And the title was longer than the poem. So. I was feeling very lonely. I was feeling in despair. When a friend said, why not go online? You might find someone there. So I posted my particulars on a site called Meet Your Match, where a gorgeous woman half my age declared me quite a catch. She made promises poeticus on sexy calisthenics, giving rise to wise eugenics, kids as cute as cybernetics. She promised me a uniform with medals, stripes and wings, and these are a few of my favourite things. She promised golden sands in tropical lands, her hands all over me. Alas, my friends, it was a means to an end, and it turned out not to be. She was sensuous and adventurous, and tied me to the bed. When I was Mickey Finn in a Holiday Inn somewhere near Birkenhead, I'd been trauma-bombed and catfished by a fiendish femme fatale who worked for Spectre, Drax, or Smirsch, or some such devilish cabal. Then I wound up, transported overseas, and it's hard to feel at ease with the Bahamas panoramas when you might end up sucked into space.
That movement from vulnerability to comedy is part of what made the evening feel alive. A loosely curated room can hold contrast without smoothing it out. It can move from grief to laughter, from prayer to absurdity, from polished delivery to someone finding their confidence in real time. Finally, Lauren Ulwin and Dr. Miffy Ryan produced a piece that begins with comic energy and then moves into a chant-like reflection on daydreaming. It's a particular connection with distraction therapy because it treats daydreaming not as wasted time, but as a charged state of imagination, a form of inner movement.
Just hey! In the pool.
heart, because you have no heart. Is the poor, you ask for better ID. Is the poor, you sold the NHS. Is the poor, you think the poor should have maps. Is the poor, you aren't a cunt. Is the poor, you don't need to say what.
That was a short selection of voices from the Word Open Mic event recorded at Attenborough Arts on Thursday the 28th of May. What stays with me is the sound of a room making space for people to try. Some people were polished, some were raw, some were funny, some were intimate, some were still finding their shape. But that's the true value of an open mic event. Culture is not only presented in places like this, it's practiced. A loosely curated event has its own kind of discipline. It asks people to listen generously, to wait, to respond, and to accept the changes of tone. It allows the evening to find its own pattern rather than imposing one too heavily from above. For distraction therapy, that's the point of sharing this feature. These are not only performances, they are traces of shared atmosphere, voices passing through a room, leaving something behind, and reminding us that the creative attention often begins in informal spaces where people are simply given enough room to speak.
先同じ空って言葉に何の意味もない。戻れないの、いつまで進めないの。僕らはつながりを確かめるように君に電話した。離れていてもと息かかるような、昨日のことや仕事の愚痴を聞いたら会えない時間を取り戻せたような。僕らは辛いのはそう、今だけ痛いのはそう、今だけ呪文みたいに自分に言い聞かせてる。独り言なんかよりも二人ごとを求めた、振り出した雨雲は君の街からか。返事ないけど僕が保たないよ、知らない過去僕らの未来話そう、会えない今を塗りつぶせるような。
花の山。 咲くようにさよなら僕ら